Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. If you're on Instagram, make sure you follow us at TSN1050. If you're not, sign up and follow us, even if it's the only account that you follow. Because if you're a big fan of the show, you've got to know what's going on behind the scenes. On Instagram, at TSN1050.
This is the home of Jerry's percentages.
The next time you try and mow my lawn, Hayes, I'll fly up there and personally dummy you in front of everyone at TSN.
This is Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050.
Ray's coming up here in a minute. He knows, I'm assuming he knows Lawrence Gilman. I mean,
yeah, I'm sure they've crossed paths.
Yeah, Gilman was out in Vancouver for a long time, and Ray lives in Vancouver and goes to a lot of games out there, would have worked a lot of games. So Lawrence Gilman, the new assistant GM here in Toronto, and we'll get to Ray in just a moment. The Blue Jays got spanked 8-1 earlier today. They blew that game in the ninth last night. The bullpen overused again today, overused yesterday. You can really feel it, like without Osuna. And it doesn't sound like Osuna's coming back anytime soon.
Scotty Mack was saying, it's like, how do you win team like five innings for the starter every time? It's like
every game. Sanchez, like, people are focused on the fact that he didn't give up any runs. He walked five guys in five innings. You can't be that have that much of a lack of plate discipline
and at the beginning of the season,
to be successful.
Everyone was like, I'm not sure about the Blue Jays. And you look at their rotation, and that's when you say, how could they be that bad after wheeling out these guys who are dynamite? Now you've got Osuna probably gone for a long time. Stroman, who the hell knows where he is?
No one has a clue when he's coming back.
No.
Yeah, I mean, nobody.
No report.
He's the Troy Tulowitzki of the staff now. Like, Tulo's just gone. Like, no one knows what his deal is.
And when it goes quiet like that, it's trouble.
Trust me. Yeah. And Estrada looks like Ed Harris again from Major League. The guy, he struggled today. Man, did he give up some contact.
Ed Harris, he needs the Vaseline.
You see that ball boy, the ball man?
Put a 3-inch drop on a curveball.
Throw some Bardol on that.
Bardol.
Did you see the guy with the arms out? He had his guns out today, the ball man.
I did not see the ball.
You got to find this. It was a fair ball, and he thought it was foul, and he grabbed it, and then he was embarrassed, so he put his head down, but he had his guns out like he's trying to get some sun on his arms. It was pretty funny. Anyway, it was an ugly afternoon.
I guess.
It was an ugly afternoon, and the Jays are now, what are they, four games under 500, seven back of the second wild card, ten back of the New York Yankees. And
that's not good.
No, it's realistically, we're dealing with a four-month grind in front of us. They have 112 games left. 4 months. And it feels like it's done, and they're not very good, and they're probably going to start making trades, and there's no reason to believe they're going to turn this around next year.
No.
And all of a sudden they're going to start winning games or catch the Yankees or the Red Sox.
I'm already sniffing it out as far as, like, I live right down there. Do you remember the excitement of people flooding to the ballpark where they had that mashing lineup and everyone was going yard, and it was, people were skipping to the Sky Dome.
Yeah, there were.
Now people are just kind of, going. I can already sense it. Like,
oh, it's only going to get worse, too.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Early in the year, people buy tickets. They're excited to have the team back. Once the weather turns and the dome actually opens, people want to be down there and be a part of it. But if they're on pace for like 70 wins or something, by August and September, you're talking 15,000 people, 13,000 people.
And you're going to watch who they're playing against.
Or you committed to it and it's a work outing, or
day
you're bringing
out,
your kids.
Day
or,
out of the...
Yeah. There's not going to be any walk-up ticket buyers. Like, that just won't happen.
So those tickets, that won't be a hot ticket. You'll be given those
You can get freebies, probably. Like, by September, if you're not getting free tickets...
I wonder, I think Steve Simmons said a few years back, it's like, it was a place to be for young people.
Absolutely.
On a Friday night, Thursday night.
Big time.
How it affects when they're not winning.
It'll affect those restaurants around it, affects the bars, everything.
But if they start winning again down the road, people will come back. Like, Jays fans have proven, they were there the whole time. They were just asleep because the team was so bad or not competitive
for so long. We talked about it with the Leafs for so long, Brian. We talk about it with any organization. Stop bluffing and blow it up, because you're not good, so don't act like you're good.
Right.
Let's bring in our hockey analyst, Ray Ferraro.
All right, joining us now, the Maple Toyota Hotline. Here's Ray Ferraro. What's up, Ray?
Those intros are better, more energetic than yours.
I told, like, right?
like, put a little effort into it, Hayes.
Yeah, seriously. He's always like, yeah, Maple Toyota, Reed Ferraro.
Well, depends on, I mean, who, if he's in a good mood or a bad mood. He's talking about the Toronto sports scene, so you know that that's pissed him off because, you know, the Jays are in the tubes.
He is moody, isn't he? He is moody.
Yeah. We were having a debate earlier, and let's hear your thoughts. What's the worst movie of all time?
Oh, my God.
Like, you can't say, it's got to be one specific movie.
Jeez, I don't go to enough anymore. I can't even think of movies that I went to that I like, let alone the ones that I hate. Do we have a couple on the board?
Well, yeah. Love Guru.
O's is the Love Guru. Mine is Cabin Boy. And Hayes is Jack and Jill with Adam Sandler, where he pretends to be his own sister.
Okay, that sounds terrible.
Yeah. How's that for a sales pitch?
Yeah, almost any movie Adam Sandler was in, I think, was one that I didn't want to be in. See, I found him so unfunny.
Oh, see, you don't even like Happy Gilmore or Billy Madison.
Well, Happy Gilmore I do. Billy Madison, I'm like, it was stupid.
You're stupid.
Yes, exactly. The only scene I liked was when he was just pounding those grade threes in dodgeball.
That's the best, isn't it?
Yeah, but I'm like, what a stupid movie. Why did I come to this?
Didn't he do another
Happy
one
Gilmore,
called
different
like,
story.
Ricky Deeds or something? What was it? No, Mr. Deeds?
Mr. Deeds. Is that where his foot was burnt?
Yeah, that's where he was from, like New Hampshire or something like that.
Oh, The Water Boy.
The Water Boy's pretty bad.
I like the Water Boy.
I'm voting Water Boy. That thing
sucks. Wasn't his name Bobby Boucher?
Bobby Boucher.
Because...
Well, what's her name? Kathy Bates was his mom.
Yes. But, like, you know, Brian Boucher, the analyst now, like, wasn't his nickname Bobby Boucher?
With Bobby. And then all of a sudden, and he talked like he had a sock in his mouth the whole thing. I hated that.
Yeah, that was brutal.
I kind of liked it.
That does suck. When you get hooked on, like, someone gives you a nickname based on something so stupid because of your name, you're like, come on, dude. Like, I get that. My whole life, people have been like, hey, Purple Haze. I'm like, thank you. Great. Like, they call me Purple Haze or Purple because of the Hendrix song, right? And I'm like, okay.
I never thought of that. I've never even crossed my mind
all the time when
Purple Haze.
It was always Purple.
Yeah, that and Jackass, but that had nothing to do with your name.
No, true. Yeah, that other derogatory terms that had nothing to do with my name. We had Matt Sakaris on from TSN Radio out in Vancouver on Lawrence Gilman, and Gilman used to be in studio with him all the time, and we told Matt, if you're expecting him to be on anytime soon, you should probably figure your life out because it's not going to happen. Our understanding is the Leafs are continuing with the Lou Lamoriello rules when it comes to the assistant GMs and assistant coaches.
They had publicized that he was going to be on for one last segment today, and then Matt had to put out a tweet, as per Leaf rules, he won't be on.
Yeah, actually, you're not going to be having him. How well do you know Lawrence Gilman?
I know Lawrence. He is a super nice guy. He is he's a real... I think he fits in with what the new look of the Leafs management is. I wouldn't say he's an analytic gearhead, but he's a... You know, he would come at things from a more of a not just an eye test way is the best way to put it, I would say. I think it's a good hire. I think he's calm. He's experienced. He's been through all of this stuff before with the Canucks. They got all the way to Game 7. He's the assistant general manager then. And, you know, with a lot of the same responsibilities as he's going to have now. He's also, I mean, I know they have Brendan Pridham there for the cap, but Lawrence is... You know, the CBA is kind of his thing. So I hadn't even really thought of it, but I think I like the hire. I think he's probably an example of maybe some of the acquisitions we'll see that might be a little bit off most people's radar, but they're, when you look at them or get to know the guy, you'll go, oh, that was a good hire, or that was a good trade. That's kind of my guess of what we're going to see this summer with some of the acquisitions from free agency or any trades they might make. And Lawrence is probably a good example of that.
Yeah, I mean, it takes me back to our conversation yesterday, the importance of the salary cap and negotiating and knowing the CBA inside out. Because based on the way you just explained, you know, how you feel about Lawrence Gilman, the new assistant GM here in Toronto, and how Sakaris described him. He sounds a lot like Brandon Pridham, you know, in terms of being on top of the numbers and being
sharp
on top
guy.
Of the CBA. Exactly. But not the rink rat eye test evaluator. So
what do they got to do? Find a rink rat or what?
Well, I would think.
Well, I mean, doesn't it mean that there's one more guy to go?
Right.
Yeah. I think there's probably, for lack of better words, and this is with all due respect, a hockey guy, like you say, a rink rat, because Lawrence Gilman's a hockey guy. So, I mean, Pridham is, like, he is. But
who's going to the under-18s
exactly,
in Slovakia?
Like
who's doing that?
Well, that would be whoever your head scout is. I mean, that's the guy they've got to hire.
Yeah.
Right? That's the one, no matter whoever they hire elsewise, that's not even a word, they've got to hire the person that replaces Mark Hunter, which is their chief scout.
Right.
Whomever that's going to be, that's really the one piece of the front office that's missing for sure.
How about that fight last night between Tom Wilson and Braden Coburn?
I can speak from my experience. If Tom Wilson came out of the box and turned left in front of my penalty box, I would stay right in there.
Yeah, Coburn's tough too, but that Wilson's
6'5". I'm not coming out of there. That would just be a. What do you say, Noodles? You come third?
Yeah.
Well, anybody that thinks that Tom Wilson is just a dummy and a goon, he is a really effective hockey player.
Yeah, he's good.
Well, don't you think? Oh, like the first goal showed a bunch of things that Wilson could do.
Kills penalties.
Right away.
He hits. He plays
he
with Ovechkin.
Back into the play. He made a nice pass back to Kuznetsov, and that all started with the way he separated the guy from the pocket center ice. I mean, it was perfect. Textbook the way you would like a power forward to play. It's funny, you know, like I'm watching the game and I'm listening to it, and when I'm looking at the highlight, or I look at, you know, as I'm watching it live, then I see the highlight, I'm like, why was Tampa in that spot so passive? There was four Tampa guys in the zone.
Yeah.
And only fourth three, line, by the way.
And Ovi's standing there like a statue, right, as he comes over the line until Kuznetsov got the puck.
Well, Ray, if you start both your first lines to start the game, why would you come back next with your fourth line? Because you know Ovechkin's coming over the boards.
Was that the Paquette line?
Yes.
The Paquette line?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, because he likes their energy or blah, blah, blah. I don't know. He's the coach, not me. I would think that Ovechkin's coming up next. And so I would probably be a little more defensive in my thought of that. But they had Strollman on the ice. He's the D that I'm looking at in that highlight. As soon as Wilson comes over the line and he drops the puck back, why wouldn't he step up on Ovechkin? It's going no other place. And if it doesn't go to Ovechkin, then he's going to shoot it from there, and your goalie better stop that. Like, I thought it was really passive, and then all of a sudden, now you're chasing the game, and the building gets quiet, you know, like super quiet right away, and you've got to fight that too. And they didn't play terribly, but man, they looked out of sorts last night to me. They looked like they just didn't have it. And Washington, even though the chances, you know, there was all kinds of great chances for Tampa, you know, Gord missing from in the crease, the post, the breakaway for Miller, it was Killorn. Like, they had enough chances, but they just didn't seem like they were connected into the game. And I thought Wash did about as well as you're going to do in a game seven. You got saves from your goalie, even though he looked like an unmade bed sometimes.
Yeah.
They get the three goals, and you know, they get the empty netter, but that was a game seven. I mean, man, to go on the road and zip it up like that is pretty damn good work.
I agree, and I want to pose the question to everyone, and you know, when you look at who's in the finals now, Vegas and Washington, I was back and forth with my buddy Dave this morning, and he said, you know, the way that teams are built right now, everything's about speed, and Vegas has tremendous speed, and I think Washington's a fast team, but Washington's really physical. And I think Vegas they don't shy away from the physicality either. Like, they've got some guys who are not shy.
Yeah.
Ryan Reeves, you've got Eglin kicking around. The way that teams have kind of gotten away from that I don't think enough focus has been on...
Well, the question is, Jamie, if it's a copycat league, what are GMs watching the finals saying? What do we have to do to compete with this?
Okay, and you're right, but here, I'll even go a step further. Does the physicality of the game, has that impacted a lot? I believe the stat is Washington had 86 hits their last two games.
Yeah, you heard John Cooper after the game six. He was like, they had 39 hits, we had 19. What's that tell you? You can't say it was all chasing the puck.
What it tells me is, like every other coach, they always like what they don't have.
Right.
They always complain about what they don't have. His team's built for speed and for puck possession. So instead of pointing out what the other guys have, why not find a way to coach up your team or find a way to get the puck back quicker and to keep the puck more? Like this stuff about building like another team, that's so, in my mind, it's so stupid.
Yeah.
So let's build a team for the Washington model. Okay, so you're going to get a defense that's decimated. You're going to get some strong forwards. Oh, yeah, and then we're going to get Backstrom and Kuznetsov in the middle and Ovechkin. Then you can start building from the Washington model. Last year it was the Pittsburgh model. Hey, we could have a no-name defense and win the Cup. Good. Get Kessel, Malkin, and Crosby on three different lines. Then you can do that.
Right.
Otherwise, you just got a crappy team.
Well, that physicality you talk about, that's why I loved what Wilson did last night.
I loved it, too.
I know some people don't like to see it, and people are saying he can contribute in other ways. I think that's exactly how you want him to contribute. He's physical.
Yeah,
he's
because
tough.
Because he can, though, Brian. Right?
Exactly. No, I'm not saying that you want other people to play that role, but, you know, like, I'm sure you guys saw it online. A lot of people are like, oh, I don't like that because, you know, the Lightning will take that all day. Absolutely. Go out and do it because Colburn was punking Kuznetsov, punking Ovechkin, and Wilson said, no, you're not going to do
not
that.
Not having that. Not
I love
my
it.
Watch.
I absolutely love it.
And see, and so that's, but to my point, that's part of what they are.
Right.
That's part of what, if Wilson doesn't do that, you're taking a chunk of his toolbox and throwing it in the garbage dump. Like, all of a sudden, he's going to play like a 5'10" forward? The guy's a beast. Play like a beast.
Yeah.
That's what he adds to their team. So, now, I think there is zero chance that he and Ryan Reeves don't fight in this series. Like, none.
Right.
They will find themselves in the same area of the ice pretty quickly. And Vegas will play as physically as they can. They've got some bigger boys, too. But the series is going to turn or not turn, in my mind, on whether they can handle Kuznetsov and Backstrom and Eller in the middle of the ice. I think Washington's center ice is admirable to anybody. And I don't know if Backstrom's got a broken hand or not, but he still looks pretty damn good to me.
Yeah, he does.
What's up with Stamkos kind of going MIA in these big games? Like, I did not notice him much at all.
He was not good last night.
He was invisible.
I thought Hedman was really poor. Hedman had the one rush, but other than that, they could have scored, and that could have changed the dynamic of the game.
But he's got playoff pedigree.
Like
Stamkos is a guy that...
Glenn Schiller had a good point on Twitter today. If that was Ovi's performance, the whole sports center today would be, what the hell's wrong with... But it's, I guess, what is it, because it's Stamkos, we're just going to...
Well, we're talking about it.
Well, yeah. But...
Well, you know what? This is my view when I watch Stamkos, and it bugs me to say this because I'm a fan of just about everything that he stands for and he does. I think he tries hard. I think he's committed to being the best player he can be. But it bugs me to watch him and see him not as effective as he used to be. And in my mind, it is the injuries he suffered have decimated his ability to be a dominant player. And I think it's kind of sad because he can't impact the game the way he used to. And maybe the other guys are more skilled and maybe the other guys are faster than they used to be when he was at his very best. But look at some of the injuries he's had. Like, he has had significant, literally body-altering injuries. And it seems to me like he's not at the level that he used to be.
Steve Yzerman's kind of always forward thinking. Do you think I watched that game end last night, Ray, and I was thinking he might try to do something drastic this summer because who knows if this group can get it done. And I don't know if it's not going to be Stamkos, but I just think he's the kind of GM that would look at it and say, okay, this group isn't getting it done. We got to change it up here. Or do you not do anything drastic?
Well, I think he's already made his drastic move. I mean, they burped up a lot of, you know, a lot of their depth organizationally to get Ryan McDonagh and JT Miller. And so it would be hard, I think, for him to do it again unless they go backwards with you know, like where you're trading a significant player for prospects and picks. And I don't see that. I think it'll be largely the same team. I think they'll, you know, there'll be attrition. There'll be four or five new guys and different players around, but I don't see a completely different team. When I watched him last night, when they kept showing him in the booth, he looked like to me like a guy that was well aware that, okay, this is not our night.
Yeah, for sure. But I Tampa, I think, is built for many years. Like, you got a 23-year-old goaltender. Mm-hmm. You've got Hedman, who's a superstar. That Sergachev is going to be a player. Mm-hmm. He already is, but, I mean, Braden Point.
They got 1 year left of McDonagh.
You're right. Like, I would tinker, but that's a really good team. And Washington's a really good team. Like, that's a thing I wouldn't panic or have these knee-jerk reactions just because you didn't finish where you wanted to. And I think that's where you look at Brian McClellan. He deserves a lot of credit. You could have, you know, everyone's blow up Washington. You're never going to have it again. You're never going to do it. Guess what? They're in the finals. Like, it's.
Yeah, I guess what Stevie Yzerman did in Detroit for so many years, they had such good teams and never seemed to get it done. And then they finally did three times.
Yeah.
I mean, look at, we all picked Washington deep last year and deep the year before, and it never happened. And then this year, I mean, they're not as good a team on paper, except they're all the way through. You know, sometimes you're forced into moves. You know, they lost Justin Williams, and they lost Olsner, and they lost Nate Schmidt in expansion. Yep. They lost Shattenkirk. How is that team better? Oh, well, doesn't matter. They're in the finals. They found a way for all the pieces to fit this year. And that's, you know, some of it's patience with McClellan. Some of it they get forced into. But I was really impressed. I was really impressed. They almost look like a team that it's their time. Now we'll see, because maybe it's Vegas' time after 9 months in existence.
Yeah, they deserve it. Well, yeah. Vegas, apparently they're favored out of Vegas. Like,
yeah,
Vegas, the odds
Bellies,
came
yeah.
out, and it's
Vegas.
It's
Vegas
a little late to jump on that bandwagon now.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. We were in the sportsbook over the weekend, and there were a couple of locals just kicking around, and they were betting on Vegas. And I think partially out of ignorance, partially out of, you know, loyalty to the team. And they're like, well, I've been watching only this team. I've never watched hockey before, but they always seem to win, so why would I stop? And I'm sitting there. Here I am, like, trying to calculate how this is going to work out.
Like, yeah, that team wins
Mr. Sports Guy over here, and I'm just dumping mortgages into the sports book. But I think partially it's because of their own fans that probably been riding the team the whole way, and Vegas is finally like, we can't keep paying out the locals here.
This is time to flip the switch.
Yeah.
See how much they really like their team.
Exactly, because they know how to gamble down there, too. They understand the odds and the way that works. So you can get plus money on Washington right now if you're into that sort of thing. All right, Ray.
You just sounded like Al Michaels at the end of a Monday Night Football game.
Yeah, a blowout.
Yeah.
But the over-under.
When he brings up the line.
I love it.
And you're like, Al has got cash on this game. There's no question.
He's got his whole career on the under. I love Al Michaels. So good. All right, man. We'll do it tomorrow.
All right, boys. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
This is Ray Ferraro joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Maple Toyota takes away the fears of buying a pre-owned vehicle by sharing service history, lien history, and accident history. Visit MapleToyota.com.
I remembered one thing. Growing up, the worst movie I ever saw was a movie called Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
I remember
it's
that.
It's like late 70s, early 80s, and it is awful. I have to look it up.
There's a lot coming in.
Attack,
like, a lot of
the
people.
Killer Tomatoes. If anybody ever sat through that nonsense.
That sounds tough.
I thought you were going to ask Ray if he has a go-to pickup line. Like, I know he's been married for a long time, but that's how we got the show started. The idea of, I don't believe anyone actually has a pickup line. Like, I think it's in movies.
I got a buddy that does. And it's so stupid. But sometimes it works.
What is it?
10% of the time it works, 100% of the time?
He'll say, my buddy Brando, he'll say, do you know what I hate about you? Absolutely nothing.
She'll go, get the hell out of here.
Sometimes.
You would think that that garbage would not work ever, but you'd be surprised how many girls go,
well, we should hear from the ladies. Like, feel free, text, email.
People that,
what works?
Do pickup lines ever work?
I'm telling you, if they laugh, it works. If they say get lost, it didn't work. You gotta make girls laugh.
Would you like a drink? That's the easiest one. So, no, I'm sorry, I've got one already. Okay, have a great
night.
That's
her way of saying you're a stiff.
Take a laugh.
That's a friend zone comment. No. A friend zone.
What, if they say no?
Yeah, if they say I gotta have a drink, it basically means if they want to talk to you, they'll say fire up a shot.
Let's do something. See, that you lay it out there, it's very safe. Like,
yeah, you're right. No one gets hurt with that line.
Exactly.
Safe zone. Friend zone sometimes.
Exactly.
Other times it works. All right, we're going to get into the NBA Finals. Ed Stefanski's been hired in Detroit, and ESPN reporting that Dwayne Casey is the primary target to be the head coach with the Pistons. Now, they're not a very good team. But when he took over the Raptors, they were not a very good team either. So, sounds like Casey may end up in Detroit. We'll get into that conversation. Tee up Game 5 tonight, Golden State-Houston. Jays got spanked earlier today. We'll get back into that. And we know who's playing in the Cup Final. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050. We got a text here from Amanda. And it says, love Amanda. Alumni jackets always work.
Oh, Amanda.
Stop it.
I'm telling you, you can read the text if you want.
So you walk up and you say, what if it's from like...
I'm doing some downtown action tonight. I might fire up the alumni jacket.
It's only 35 degrees Celsius. Yeah.
Shorts and the alumni coat. Just walk into a bar with shorts on, Crocs, and... The alumni coat and jacket. A muscle shirt.
No undershirt.
Yeah.
No undershirt. Alumni. A tight pair of nut-hugging shorts. Pair of Crocs and see what happens.
I don't know if that can happen.
Why would you wear the alumni jacket in the summer, though?
There's a couple functions I have where I'm wearing it. And I know you guys think it's nuts, but I am.
I would never wear it.
I know you wouldn't.
I would happily wear it at the games. Happily.
Well, we all have different things.
No, like, I know that.
I don't know
why you would wear an alumni jacket in 30-degree weather.
Well, I don't. We're not accusing him of doing that.
So he said he might pull it out tonight. He might be rocking the alumni jacket. Do you know the sweat stains you'll have in that thing?
You go into, like, Harbor 60, it's air-conditioned.
If you're at a patio with the alumni jacket...
I dare you.
If there was a summer kind of... like engagement announcement, I would fire that up with some khakis and some dress shoes, and away you go.
Okay. Mark Kesticher, he's down in Houston. He's calling the Rockets-Warriors game for ESPN Radio tonight, and he joins us now. What's happening, Mark?
Guys, good to be on with you this afternoon.
Yeah, thanks for doing this, man. You got a great, great gig here. I mean, this is the sporting event that everyone's buzzing about. We don't know if Klay Thompson's going to play. It sounds like he will. We don't know if Andre Iguodala will play. It sounds like he probably won't. What's your read? How are you feeling about tonight's game?
Well, on the injury front, I would agree with both. I think Thompson will play. We were down at their practice earlier this morning, and when they let the media in, he had just taken a seat next to an assistant and was watching some video on a computer, but it sounds like he'll be all right. As far as Iguodala's concerned, you know, I watched him take some jump shots. He wasn't, you know, getting a lot of lift. They were just in a line, just kind of messing around. I kind of leaning to the fact that he may not go. We saw him in the parking lot at the Oracle after game 4. And he looked like a guy that was going to be able to play in an NBA game in 48 hours. He could barely move. Now, you know, that was 3 hours after a game. Maybe he hadn't been getting treatment, and I'm sure they've been working on him nonstop since then. So I could be wrong, but I just get the sense that they might hold him out and try to get him healthy for one more. And it's a team that is carrying 6 centers. They're only playing 1 or 2. I don't know if we'll see David West, you know, if we consider him a center, you know, in their rotations. Maybe they bring him back a little bit just to straighten out the minutes, because clearly they were tired coming down the stretch, a lot of ISO ball from Golden State, and that's not their game. It kind of sounds like I'm leaning toward Rockets tonight, but this Warriors team, whenever they, you know, get beaten down, and I don't want to say everyone counts them out because I don't think anybody's counted them out for the last 4 years, I would expect a big punch from them tonight.
Well, if you believe in any kind of momentum, there's the big debate in the building we work at where some people think game to game there is no momentum, there's always a clean slate. But the Rockets, they played tough in that fourth quarter, the last game. The Warriors... I consider them like an automatic in sports. They hit the shots, they get open, they do it, much like a Tiger Woods with a big putt on Sunday. But that fourth quarter, the Rockets locked it down.
I mean, it was, you're looking at it and saying, I didn't think this was possible. We were just going over some tracking numbers in our production meeting, and they had six uncontested field goals in the fourth quarter, and they missed them all. I mean, everything went wrong for Golden State, and you're right, credit Houston. They played great defense, you know, from after 12-0 was the start from that point on, except for the third quarter when Golden State, you know, put up 34 points and Steph Curry had his third quarter party and it looked like that game was over. But it was so surprising to see and so shocking to see almost some disorganization, you know, looking at, you know, some of the film after the game, and Steve Kerr was talking about this with us today, was how they didn't spread the floor in those last few minutes, and they were making catches 35, 40 feet from the basket, and guys weren't, you know, their screening action, there wasn't much of it, and what there was wasn't very effective or forceful. He said some of that could have been that they were getting tired because of all the minutes. And then he took some of the blame himself, saying, you know, maybe I should have drawn up better plays, maybe should have called a timeout here, timeout there. But you just figure Golden State's going to find a way, and so you're stunned when they don't. I don't know. I agree at the start of your statement on the carryover. I think in these series, it feels like there is no momentum. Wipe the slate clean, throw the ball up, and see which direction it's going to go between, I guess you could argue, the two best teams in the NBA all year and right now.
Well, you mentioned Steph's third quarter, you know, I guess party. I mean, he's dancing around out there, and that's where I like both teams, and in watching that game, I got frustrated with that, and I think that's when the beard locked it down, because they, you know, when you, I don't want to call it premature dancing around before you've won the game.
He's trying to say he's an old school hockey guy.
Yeah,
he didn't like it.
I didn't like it just because I thought the game wasn't over at that point.
Right.
And it almost, it to me, it, I thought Houston got going after that, and it kind of changed the momentum for me. I mean, is that something that you get a sense out of the players, that they would have pointed to that as maybe a turning point?
You know what I like about the Rocket players that they brought in this year, and those are guys like, well, Trevor Ariza had been here, but I'm thinking of, trying to think who's played really good defense this year. P.J. Tucker, he's one that comes to mind. Chris Paul, you know, we think of as a great, you know, orchestrating point guard, but is also a good defender. But it's Tucker. That's the one that comes to mind, where I don't even think he looks at time and score in a bad way. I think he just says, all right, they got us there, let's dig in a little harder. And, I mean, these guys were logging just as many minutes, if not more, than what the Warriors were. They played basically seven guys, and I think Steve Kerr said 6.5, which might be right. And I don't think they cared, and did it spur them on? Maybe it did. I will say this to make an excuse for the Warriors. When they have third quarters like that, especially at home, they don't lose. So it probably feels like a party. Probably feels like, yeah, game over. We got it done. I couldn't believe the stat I read. Steve Kerr now has been the head coach for 4 years at Golden State. In the third quarters, they win by 15 or more points, and they won that quarter by 17, 51 times, won all 51 games. I mean, they don't blow fourth quarter leads, you know, at home when they have that kind of explosion. And so maybe to them it feels like, yeah, party on, but I get the sense we'll have a different feeling from the Warriors, especially because of the fact that they're on the road here, and they haven't been tested in a series like this since the finals, which predates Kevin Durant back in 2016.
With Mark Kestacher, he's calling the game from ESPN Radio tonight. Houston taking on Golden State Game 5. We obviously know Dwayne Casey really well. He was here for 7 years, and we interviewed him a bunch, met him a bunch of times, and I think the second he got let go here in Toronto, we all expected that he'd pick up one of these open positions. Now, it's not in Milwaukee. We know what happened there. Doesn't sound like it's going to be in Orlando. They're pursuing Tom Izzo. We'll see if that actually happens. But now ESPN is reporting that with Ed Stefanski taking over the Pistons, his primary target is Dwayne Casey. And it would be very similar to the situation he took over here in Toronto. Not a ton of star power. I mean, they've got Drummond and Blake Griffin up front, but they don't have much else. I'm not sure I would support that move if I was Dwayne Casey. How would you feel about taking over the Pistons' job?
Well, I'm with you, first of all. The moment he was released, all other 29 teams, if they had openings, would love to sink their claws into him. Great guy, as you know, from the interviews. Always love Coach Casey, having time around him, and a great coach as well. Speaking of Detroit specifically, yeah, I agree with you. I think they traded away their draft pick too in that Blake Griffin trade. Mm-hmm. So that hamstrings them a little bit more too. It really depends on, does he really want to coach this year? I think, look, obviously the TV opportunities are going to be there, whether, it's with our network in Bristol, Connecticut or others. I think that maybe there are other opportunities that could play itself out next year. So it depends if he wants to take a break and, take a look at the landscape and see what's there. I think Milwaukee, you're right, would have been natural if that had happened for him. Be like, yeah, grab that, because there's just so much upside. Yeah, there's a lot to do in Detroit, and you're right. He just spent a large chunk of his career getting the Raptors to where they were, to the record-breaking regular season this year, and just not quite as far as everyone had hoped. But I kind of lean with you on that. When I first saw the story, I'm like, I wonder if he wants to look around and see if something better comes up, and I don't know his relationship with Ed Stefanski, who was hired today to take over that in Detroit as far as basketball operations. So I don't really have a good feel on it right now, but if it was me, I'd probably sit out, wait, and pick the job you want.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Enjoy the game tonight. Thank you, Mark.
I shall. Thanks for being on. Thanks for asking me to be on. Good being on in Toronto all the time.
You got it, man. There's Mark Kestacher from ESPN Radio. We'll see. I mean, he brings up an interesting point about Casey getting into the media. I mean, that opportunity might be there for him. He's going to get another gig. It's just a matter of which one you want to take. You know, Detroit, I just don't like their makeup. I don't like the team.
You don't want him to rush into anything so that he's...
Well, I mean, it's his life. He can do whatever he wants, but...
I used to tell former players of mine that were going into situations, why would you want to go to a tire fire? Because you're just going to get dragged down and sucked into the vortex of garbage, and it reflects on you, and people don't want to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Took Gerard Gallant a long time to recover from being the head coach of the Columbus Blue Jackets, and it was just garbage, and people in upstairs are thinking, why do I want that guy?
Yeah, you do get...
Bobby Bugner, we both know Boogie, and he came in, head coach, Florida Panthers. Boom. Good job. They almost made the playoffs, but if it's a tire fire, it's like, ugh.
Well,
why do you want it?
Peter Horacek, what do you think of when you think of Peter Horacek?
Yeah, I had people that call me saying, what do you think about that assistant job? I'm like, I don't know. That seems to be a tire fire that's going to get blown up. Do you want to go down with the ship?
No, exactly. I mean, listen, I'm sure you're dealing with different emotions if you're an unemployed coach in any sport. There's a part of you that's thinking, I got to get back in the game as quickly as possible so they don't forget about me.
Right.
But then there's another part of you that's probably thinking, especially in Casey's scenario, he's greatest coach in a team's history. They just won 59 games. There's going to be a lot of teams that are going to be thinking,
yeah,
you know, maybe not handing you the job, but you're going to get interviewed in a lot of different spots.
Well, you may want to sit back and just... I mean, see what comes at you.
Wait for the best spot possible.
Exactly.
And maybe it is Detroit. You know, Blake Griffin and Andre Drummond, that's a really quality front court. I just don't see any other talent around them.
Right.
So, you know, maybe the new GM got big plans in terms of the offseason. Who knows? So, we'll see. Darren Dreger coming up at 6:25. We'll get back into Game 7 last night in Tampa. We're starting to tee up the Stanley Cup Finals. The Blue Jays got blown up again today, losing 8-1 to the Angels. And the Maple Leafs making another hiring earlier this afternoon. We'll tell you about that. Overdrive continues on the TSN app. All right, Darren Dreger will join us at 6:25. We have the Stanley Cup set up now. It's Vegas, Washington. It's a pretty good traveling cup final. Those are two pretty cool towns.
For sure.
You know, Washington's an underrated city. It's very cool. And
a little gritty.
It's gritty in some parts, but like downtown.
Yeah, you get
like,
to that Georgetown area.
Yeah.
Well, it's awesome, but I remember when Duffy
That's where
was talking
you, when
about
you were 22, could have tried your I'm in college in my parents' basement routine.
Remember when Duffy was talking about it, and I was like, nah, I got a sense of uneasiness when I was there, because your whole world...
Oh, because of Trump and all that stuff?
Like, it's just, you get an uneasiness there. That's the only thing.
Trump talking about the new anthem policy with the NFL and...
Yeah, I mean,
man, the players. I'm honestly starting to believe that the players are all going to come together and collectively protest. Like, this is a challenge from the league, but a challenge almost straight from Trump, and that it's a weak union to begin with because there's no guaranteed contracts, and
that's the thing. I mean, if they come together, you're right.
But what are they going to do? You can't suspend every single player. No. Like, if Tom Brady takes a knee. What New England's not going to do anything?
No, I think.
So I almost say it brought more attention to it. It wasn't
It was starting to die off.
Yeah, I know.
Bit,
it's
so
like just let it be, and you had to come out with this. Now it's just pissing everyone off again.
I think,
and what happened in Milwaukee?
That doesn't help.
That doesn't help.
No. Like,
if you ever wonder why these guys are protesting, there's an example. If you're a white guy from Canada, you can say, "Why are they doing that?" But you know what?
Yeah.
Check that video out and see if you like that.
I think people will. Players will find a different way to protest. That's what I would do. Like, you know, to shine light on that and be proactive with it. I mean, if they say you can't do this, one thing, circumvent it and find a different way.
Mm.
That's what they're going to do. Guys are creative.
Yeah.
And you know what? The other thing is they have a short window to earn a bunch of money and play. That's what they're banking on.
Well, I think that's what the owners are banking on.
You're right, but that's what I'm saying. Like, Kaepernick is as popular as he is. I mean, he's left. I know he made a lot of money, but he's left a lot of money on the table too. And for his cause, which is admirable, but
well, yeah. I mean, I've always been a believer that you have the right to protest. You don't have the right to, you know, the avoidance of some of ramifications.
Right.
You know, sometimes there are ramifications, and I think the Kaepernick situation is much deeper than that, because he's arguing that there is collusion here and he's been blackballed and all the teams have come together and
Correct.
Basically said kick him out of the league. And Eric Davis is suing for the same issue. So Kaepernick has become a much bigger and multi-layered scenario. But I think the Players Association, they're disappointed because they weren't included in the conversations.
Yeah.
Which would have that's the easiest thing you can do if you're Goodell. Like, throwing all of Branch out there, bring in the PA and say, we got to figure this out. Because we all, you know, it's a business. We all want to make the NFL as popular as possible. And we all want to be respectful of blah, blah, blah. And I'm sure there could have been some middle ground. And it doesn't seem like the owners were really caring for that. And feels like they basically capitulated to Trump and his followers. And now Trump is going to parade this out as a win. And the players, you know how they're going to feel about that. So
yeah, it'll
I just think it's going to get ugly, man.
Yeah, it'll turn into a mess.
Darren Dreger coming up at 6:25. We'll get back into the hiring of Lawrence Gilman, the new assistant GM here in Toronto with the Maple Leafs. The Jays got spanked. They dropped 6 of 7 on this homestand against Oakland and the LA Angels. And the NBA playoffs continue tonight. Game 5, Golden State in Houston. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050.